Heads up, fans of the world. While you've been listening to the show, we've entered a whole new era. We now live in a time when data is the new oil. That's right, it's like black gold. Dark, expensive, and whoever controls it has all the power. For the next few weeks, we'll be featuring a special podcast in your feed called Raw Data, all about life in this new data age. Raw Data from PRX, how your information gets turned into power. Check it out.
Conspiracy theories kind of have kind of replaced this place where ideology used to be. We live in a world full of conspiracies, full of motivations and hidden hands that one could never fathom.
In 2014, an important report about Russian disinformation came out. It was all about a new Russian style of propaganda.
So this was before this was a sexy subject. And I was already saying, look, they have a new approach to propaganda. There's something interesting going on here.
A couple years later, in 2017...
That report made a big impression on at least one person.
I was on an airplane reading that.
A data researcher.
And I almost fell out of my seat on the airplane reading that paper because so much of what they said, that's what I was seeing in my data. I just couldn't make sense of it. I was like, what is going on? Why is this happening? And then they kind of laid it out.
Today, we're going to unpack that report. This is the third episode in our series on Russian disinformation. We'll talk about how Russia created a new kind of propaganda and then took it global, and explain how disinformation becomes power.
This is Raw Data. I'm Mike Osborne.
And I'm Andrea Mustaine. Last time, we talked about the mechanics of how disinformation found its way inside the United States, how Russia used technology and social media to aggravate existing racial and political conflicts. Basically, how Russia has been messing with us.
This time, we're going to start inside Russia itself. Because before Russia started messing around with disinformation outside its borders, it perfected its techniques at home. We wanted to talk with someone who was on the ground, watching closely just as Vladimir Putin was beginning to flex his disinformation muscles.
My name is Peter Pomerantsev. I'm an author of nonfiction books specializing on propaganda, and I run a little think tank at the London School of Economics focusing on that subject.
You could almost say that Peter Pomerantsev's interest in propaganda is in his blood. He grew up in London, but he was born in the Soviet Union, where his parents were dissidents. They got in trouble just for giving books to people.
And my parents in the Soviet Union had been arrested for, you know, the right to read and to write. So for them, it was an existential thing. It's very hard to imagine in our present day of kind of information abundance. That was the great battle of the 20th century, was for the simple right to read and to write and to say things.
When the Soviet Union collapsed, it looked like that battle had been won. That freedom of information was going to be a part of the new Russia. And in 2001, a year after this new guy, Vladimir Putin, took office, Peter, a fluent Russian speaker, moved to Russia to work as a TV producer.
At the time, there was a lot of interest in bringing Western-style programming to Russia.
It was still a very exciting place to be in Russia. People were creating new magazines and new websites. And even though it was clear that there were some repressively minded people around, there was still an assumption for me anyway that Russia was heading to a good place.
But pretty soon, Peter got the sense that things were not heading to a good place. He saw the trappings of Western-style freedom of information everywhere, but
what was happening was that Russia was using a lot of the language of democracy and even freedom of speech, but using it in a way that kind of subverted democracy.
He witnessed what he later described as the rise of a new form of authoritarianism, one that was orchestrated through the theater of television, blending sensationalized entertainment with Soviet-style control behind the scenes. On TV, you'd see politicians battling it out over the issues of the day.
They don't want it to be top-down and some boring Soviet-style presenter telling people what the truth is. They do want people screaming at each other. Kind of a Jerry Springer kind of effect.
It was reality TV with a political agenda.
But the whole thing was being staged by TV producers and political operatives with close ties to the Kremlin.
Television promoted Putin as this bare-chested hunter, a ladies' man, this amazing leader.
There was even a 2008 DVD called Let's Learn Judo with Vladimir Putin.
But good drama requires conflict. So TV also made sure to show opposition groups too. But it made them all look like blathering idiots. And the crazy thing was, everyone kind of knew what was going on.
There could almost be a kind of a slight kind of game there where, like, by revealing how fabricated it all is, A, the Kremlin says, look, we're in complete control. Even what you think is the opposition, we control that. And B, which is even more subversive, you say, well, look, all the parties in the West are fake as well. Democracy everywhere is a sham. If we can fake this, that means the British and the Americans can fake this as well, and everyone's faking it.
Peter lived in Russia for almost a decade, and over that time, he watched as Russia engineered a new kind of propaganda, one made for the 21st century, a kind of dystopian Potemkin village, one made of social media posts and tweets and staged political arguments on TV.
As he saw this new version of propaganda flourish, Peter's alarm grew. In 2011, he started writing articles about it. And the more he learned, the more he realized that governments in the West really weren't that concerned about what was going on.
In 2014, he and another journalist published a report all about Putin's new propaganda war called The Menace of Unreality. They said that Russia's power was growing and that social media was a game changer. Soon after that report came out, Peter met with members of the Obama administration. But he says they didn't seem to think that propaganda was a big threat.
And they were like, we're aware of this. We know what you're talking about. We completely recognize this. But I'm not ascribing this to anyone in particular. But essentially, their argument was, this is because Russia's weak. This is, you know, they use these tools, information, corruption, et cetera, it's because they're weak. And at the end of the day, I think implicitly, America doesn't care about stuff at this level. This just isn't serious enough for us to kind of, you know, we're dealing with the next terrorist threat and rogue nukes. Please, we're not going to start caring about bots.
In April of 2015, Peter even gave congressional testimony before the Committee on Foreign Affairs.
Russia has launched the most amazing information warfare blitzkrieg we have ever seen. Conspiracy theories, disinformation, fake news are a staple in these media. This is not merely an information war, but a war on information.
Russia's system of state-sponsored propaganda on TV and social media just didn't sound scary. After all, Russia wasn't a global superpower anymore.
And then, 2016.
This means that Donald Trump will be the 45th president of the United States.
In history, as the UK votes to leave the European Union, the Prime Minister...
A stunning upset in Austria's presidential race.
Hardline anti-crime mayor Rodrigo Duterte is poised to become the next president of the Philippines.
Turns out, you don't need a nuclear weapon to blow things up.
At the same time that Russia was using their information weaponry to attack the U.S., they were also using it to advance their interests in other places around the world.
The Syrian government under President Bashar al-Assad has started a brutal offensive in this part,
namely in Syria.
Good morning. Russia is launching its cruise missiles as part of a coordinated attack.
And the results there show just how deadly disinformation can be.
Russia seems to be reasserting itself as a superpower.
Russia is a strong ally of President Bashar al-Assad, Syria's authoritarian leader. He has been slaughtering his own people since 2011 in a brutal civil war.
And it turns out that Russia has not only been helping Assad with actual weapons, they've also been using disinformation to target a grassroots organization called the White Helmets.
The White Helmets are a humanitarian response organization that operates in rebel-held areas of Syria.
Kate Starbird, the data researcher we heard at the top of the show, is a professor at the University of Washington. She's done a ton of data analysis on Russian disinformation. We featured her in part two of our series.
So one of the things that White Helmets did, and they still do, although they have... You know, there's not many of them left, to be perfectly honest, and many have died on the job. But what they would do, they would both provide medical aid, they provide sort of search and rescue, but they would also bring cameras.
So they started wearing these cameras on their helmets. But that then became one of the biggest piles of evidence of war crimes by the Russia and Syria.
That evidence, when it first started to circulate, functioned to garner sympathy from Western audiences, and the Western world began to see the impacts of the Syrian civil war.
The footage taken by these humanitarian workers started to show up in Western media. People in the U.S. were calling the white helmets heroes.
And that was seen as a threat to the Syrian government and their Russian allies who were, you know, trying to sort of eradicate rebels and take over. And they didn't want people to see the impacts of what they were doing.
And that sparked a full-on disinformation war against the White Helmets.
The White Helmets Rescue Group is part of the terror network Al-Qaeda.
They started to get massively attacked by Syrian propaganda, but then by Russian propaganda.
There are Al-Qaeda members, and that's proven on the net. The same members are killing or executing.
The people perpetrating that influence campaign are very good, and they understand how to use multiple kinds of social media platforms and other kinds of media together to take advantage of the way some of the systems work and to kind of overwhelm a conversation with their narratives. They claim that the White Helmets are organ traffickers, that they take organs from dead bodies or kill people and take the organs and sell them. I mean, it's absurd, some of the claims that they make.
And these damning stories were coming from all over the place.
Went all the way down from, like, kind of the Russian representative of the UN all the way down to little bots and trolls on Twitter, basically trying to smear them, saying that they were actually Al-Qaeda, that you couldn't trust them, and actually they're just terrorists, to the idea that they're actors who do these kind of fictional rescue operations in order to say bad things about Assad.
Crisis actors.
Yeah, exactly. You know, the whole thing's just a movie.
And what makes this new, different from the Soviet approach for sure, is that this new Russian brand of propaganda isn't even trying to convince people that what the bots and YouTube and Russian government officials are saying is even true.
They don't have to convince, you know, all of the Western audiences of the most salacious claims. All they have to do is create enough doubt in enough people about the legitimacy of that organization, that people discard their evidence and stop feeling that sympathy and begin to feel like, I just don't know. I'm just not sure.
You know, the job isn't necessarily to convince anyone because the message is so contradictory. It's just to sow enough doubt and sow enough confusion that people are just turned off the idea of taking any kind of side in this conflict.
The United States has stopped funding one of the most important humanitarian rescue groups in Syria. The White Helmets, formerly known as the Syrian Civil Defense, is a group of 3,000 volunteers saving lives in the war-torn country.
In 2018, the U.S. withdrew most of its support for the White Helmets and stopped funding most other humanitarian efforts in Syria.
So, to review the Russian strategy, first, create confusion. Tell a bunch of different stories, some plausible, some crazy, across every form of modern communication. Create a world of conspiracies. Basically, confuse the daylights out of people. Then, people are like, ugh, this is so exhausting. I don't even know what to believe. So why try to do anything about it?
Which leads to the third step, that most important one of all.
When you live in a world which is full of conspiracies which you can't understand, then you need kind of a strong hand to guide you through this and a strong authoritarian hand to protect you in this scary, cold world. And also, it's pointless you trying to do anything, because any of your attempts to change anything, they're going to be pointless because you don't really even understand the rules of this world.
Disinformation breeds authoritarians and vice versa, and not just in Russia.
The problem, there's several layers to the problem, is a completely global moment. So, and we see very similar patterns all across the world.
Turkish voters gave additional powers to the president and less power to their own future trips to the ballot box.
Authoritarians are rising to power. In some cases, there are some ties back to Russia.
The French government is concerned about Russian involvement in their upcoming presidency.
In other cases, it's hard to know. Maybe authoritarians are just adopting the techniques of disinformation pioneered by Russia.
Brazil has a new president, becoming the latest nation to elect a far-right leader.
According to Peter, the reason authoritarianism is on the rise is because 21st century technology allows disinformation to spread like never before.
And the point of these conspiracies is that you can never know the truth. And so in that sense, Donald Trump is very, very similar. In that way, he kind of, you know, he just says, well, we don't know. We never know.
This was the largest audience to ever witness an inauguration, period.
You never know, you know.
All of this with the global warming and that, and a lot of it's a hoax. It's a hoax. I mean, it's a money-making industry, okay? It's a hoax.
So Trump plays in that as well. And just it's just this world where your feet never touch any solid factual ground.
And this new state of affairs is largely possible because the people who create and amplify disinformation across our TVs and smartphones and computers are invisible. A wizard hidden behind the curtain, pulling the levers, conjuring false versions of reality.
We have no idea who is behind campaigns. We don't understand how the information environment is being shaped. You know, is something organic? Is it amplified? How come we're seeing one thing on Facebook and not another thing? We don't understand any of this.
It won't be easy, but Peter says there are ways to begin to address the power imbalance between consumers of news and the purveyors of disinformation.
So the number one thing I would say, just to start off, let's change that relationship. And that means a radical transparency. That means being able to see every bit of content that's targeted at you, why it's being targeted at you, who's behind it. So at the very least, people will be able to engage with the information environment around them with 2020 vision.
In other words, if you see something on Facebook or YouTube, you should know who made it, why you're seeing it, and whether the source is trustworthy. In addition to transparency rules, Peter also says there should be some public oversight of the algorithms that tech companies use to deliver information. And, of course, the disinformation that often comes with it.
But Kate Starbird says there's one huge problem, a big catch-22, if we want to have governments take action.
Once people that benefit from disinformation have taken political power, it's hard to imagine that the governments that are run by those people are going to take action to limit disinformation. A lot of the governments, both here in the U.S. and other places, now have people in different positions of power that have benefited and continue to benefit from disinformation. They're not motivated. They're not incentivized to stop it.
Let's make one thing clear. We've been talking about Russian disinformation, but the United States is not innocent in all this. We also have a hand in this new information war. It is American tech companies that created the infrastructure on which a lot of it is built. Companies like Facebook, Twitter, and Google are in many ways the enablers of this new kind of propaganda.
If the great battle of the 20th century was over information, for the simple right to read and to write and to say things, the great battle of the 21st century is almost the opposite. Now, there's too much information. Governments, companies, and ordinary people are struggling to defend themselves against the onslaught. That doesn't mean we won't figure it out. We just haven't figured it out yet. And until we do, disinformation will remain a very powerful weapon. Peter Pomerantsev's new book is called This Is Not Propaganda, Adventures in the War Against Reality. It goes on sale August 6th.
You've been listening to Raw Data from PRX. This episode was reported by Mike Osborne and written by both of us.
Catherine Finalosa is the episode producer. Curtis Fox is our editor. Ian Koss is our sound designer. Our theme music is by Michael Linder at Hat Pineapple Productions.
Additional support from John Barth, Genevieve Sponsler, and Ray Pang.
Raw Data is supported by the Freeman Spogli Institute for International Studies at Stanford University, whose mission is to produce interdisciplinary research on critical global issues.
Learn more about their research and upcoming events at fsi.stanford.edu.
Funding for Raw Data is provided by the Alfred P. Sloan Foundation, enhancing public understanding of science, technology, and economic performance.
I'm Mike Osborne.
And I'm Andrea Mustaine. Thanks for listening.
If you liked this episode, check out the whole season of Raw Data, available wherever you get your podcasts.